You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 6th of July, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, as it's Truth Without Radio, we've got the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, with us today, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Sven. How are you? All right?
Hot. Very, very hot in the studio here, and I can't have the fans on, obviously, because it will affect the noise, but I get the same. Yeah. With the windows closed as well. And we've got a bit of a special treat for listeners tonight. We've also got the return of our co-host from a year ago, Messerschmitt. Schmidt, how are you doing today? And welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I feel thrilled and honored to be back on Truth Without Radio. It feels a bit like coming home, actually.
Well, we're very pleased to have you here. I know you had some problems with your videos getting pulled from YouTube. I believe you've found a solution to that. Is that right?
Well, they have not been pulled. They have been put into what they call limited state. So it's basically impossible for anyone to find them. People cannot comment on them or like them. You basically have to have someone give you the link and then you can still watch them. But only if you are in a country that has free speech like the US. And so they are banned in most European countries. You can get around that by using a program that sends a fake US IP. But, well, I've uploaded those two videos that I've made to archives.org and everybody should be able to find them there.
Excellent, excellent. And are you working on doing a third one to the War Hero series?
Well, I definitely intend to do a third one, at least. I don't know what will happen after that, but I will, because I promised that I will do the Adolf Galland one. But I cannot say how long it will take. I was working on it, and then my computer broke when I moved, and I lost the research that I had done, which means basically video material, mostly pictures and all that. But I still have the audio that we both worked on. And so it will get published, but I cannot say right now how long it will take.
Okay, so we've got that to look forward to. And Dennis, you've got a new channel up as well, haven't you? Let's just give listeners the name of that channel again so they can find you now.
Yeah, I managed to get back on my old channel, but obviously in England it's still not viewable. But in England you can view me at Wisest of the Wise.
Wisest of the Wise. So check out Wisest of the Wise.
That's right. The one, yeah.
Yeah, and you can still check your stuff out on HookTube as well. I guess most people know about that. Just go to HookTube.com and then you just paste in the YouTube address after it says HookTube, and then that will allow you to view censored material, basically. And you can check the comments there as well, but you can't actually respond to them. And because of this, because you've had to get a new channel, there really aren't that many comments for us to go into. But what we have got, we've got a preview of chapter 15, which we're going to discuss. We've got two comments that we're going to look at, and we're also going to look at what's called the Wolfskinder, the German children that were evacuated during the war. And the first thing that really should be addressed is, I noticed there was a comment addressed to you, Dennis. It's from someone called Lei Xuan. Yeah, they say, Dennis, could you make a Truth Without episode about Mitt Brüninger Sorge? And I'm guessing, you know, it's not really worth a whole episode, but it's the Encyclical of Pope Pius XI on the Church and the German Reich. Did you get a chance to have a look at that, Dennis?
No.
I didn't. It's complicated.
I have answered him, I think, but it was a while back, so I'm not sure whether or not I'll be doing anything on that at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite complicated. It's very technical language. It's an encyclical from the Pope. But it just so happens I've been reading a lot about the subject matter that's in that, in the book The Holy Reich, which we talked about last week. And what the Pope is doing in this letter, because they had this deal with the German Reich, part of the deal was that the state wouldn't interfere in church matters and the church wouldn't interfere in state matters. And that was the agreement. But what was actually happening was that the state was starting to interfere in some church matters. There was a belief among the National Socialists that the Old Testament was Jewish and therefore it should be removed from the Bible. Now, we know that the Old Testament wasn't actually written by Jews, but that is a common mistake to make. But to call for it to be removed from the Bible is a heresy, which is Marcionism. And no church could really go along with that, the idea of removing the Old Testament. So that's what Pius was referring to. And there was also a drive to remove St. Paul. And that was because of misunderstanding what he says. When he says that there's no difference between Jew and Gentile, he says, or Jew and Greek. I mean, that is a reference to a verse in the Book of Maccabees that tells you that the Greeks or the Spartans were actually of the same tribe originally as the tribe of Judah. And this is recorded in Flavius Josephus' histories.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Paul is referring to. He's not saying everybody is the same, all the different races are the same. He's saying these two specific peoples are the same, and he's referring to something else. And that was another point that the Pope is referring to. And the other point that he's referring to is there was a drive to stop the sectarianism. In Germany, you had, I think, 28 different Protestant churches and the Catholic Church, and they all had their own separate schools. And there was a drive to put all the schools together underneath one church, and that would have meant that the Catholic schools were no longer separate. So again, the Pope was upset about that. And the final thing was Rosenberg, who really wasn't, he was tolerated by the National Socialists, but his ideas were mocked, and he himself was mocked as well by the top tier of National Socialists. But he was very much against the original sin. He said that wasn't, that wasn't a Germanic idea, the idea that, people should be bearing this guilt. But that goes directly against Adolf Hitler, who used original sin as an allegory for race mixing. So even there, Rosenberg is actually going against the National Socialist position, and the Pope was referring to that as well. So those are the main points that I get from this encyclical. And I mean, he's not saying National Socialism is wrong. We need to take down the National Socialists. He's just pointing out these points of difference, which, to be honest, I mean, my sympathies are with the Pope on this, really. Because it was based on mistakes, and the state shouldn't be interfering with the church, unless the church is interfering with the state, which it wasn't doing. So really, the Pope was in the right. And what do you think of that, Dennis? You know about some of those subjects anyway, don't you?
Yeah, well, the thing is that Hitler didn't want to mess with the churches. He tried it with the Protestant churches, and then finally didn't get anywhere and said it's not his business. So I'm surprised to hear that they tried to do it again in the Catholic Church. Whether that was Hitler or not, I don't know.
Well, it wasn't so much messing with the churches. It was, trying to change the Bible. It was just with the schools that they were trying to amalgamate together. And yeah, Hitler was supportive of the Protestants. They saw Martin Luther, the spirit of Martin Luther, being against the Jews as, this more of a Germanic thing rather than an anti-Catholic thing or a Protestant thing. Yeah. He was a German hero. And a lot of the National Socialists, even the ones that were Catholic, supported him. But what I gain from this book is the Holy Reich. What you really get is this idea that they were really against clericalism. They were against this priestcraft. And the priests being elevated to this position where they're the ones that dispense God's grace. That's what they were against. But they were not against Christianity and the principles of Christianity. In fact, the whole of National Socialism was built on those principles. And anybody that went against that, like there were like pagan newspapers that tried to say, we are the voice of the National Socialists, and they were banned and kicked out. And this happened to quite a few people. Nobody could say we are National Socialist if they weren't Christian. If they weren't going to be pro-Christian, they were out. And that's just the way it is. I mean, a lot of these people today that, pagans or atheists that claim to be National Socialist, they would have had nothing to do with them. Nothing to do with them at all. And, that wasn't what it was about. Anyway, I hope that shed some light on that. And probably we'll find some more as I go on further through this book. But the next comment was one which I think we can all say what we think about, and this is by Big Bad One, and he says, which documentary would you say be the best to start a sheep on? I believe you should show them communism through the back door first, then masonry, then greatest story. I've seen too many comments from people saying TGSNT is Nazi propaganda. So what do you think is the best one to start normies on, and why, Dennis?
Well, I think I answered this one as well. I said that people who criticise The Greatest Story Ever Told are usually either trolls or, you know, the usual crowd, because without watching that first and understanding what went on before 1945, it's just to show them after 1945 is like there's no link, there's no credence to it all. So I said, you know, you've got to watch the first one to realise what Hitler and Germany and the Allies were all about. Then you understand the second one, because that's all about 1945 onwards, which shows you how, why and who got us where we are. And obviously the third one I'm doing, we're going even deeper to it all. But I said, you know, you have to watch, because we're all under a spell. In 1945, the whole world's under a spell. And that's the only documentary, really, which has brought that spell, where, you know, numerous people have said he woke up. So I can't say more than that, really.
And which one do you think would be the best one to show Normie Schmidt, and why?
I think it depends on which group specifically. I would say that Americans that are sometimes called boomers, the baby boomers, they would probably be they would find communism by the back door more appealing, and maybe younger people who know a bit about Freemasonry and who have been led into the direction of the what we call the conspiracy theorists, who believe that the Illuminati are all, behind all of these bad things happening, maybe they would be better served by watching The Secret Masonic Victory of World War II first.
Yeah, I think I think the best one, really, I'm inclined to agree with you, Dennis, is Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I mean, that doesn't really have that much of the conspiracy stuff in it. If you're going to show them communism by the back door, or Freemasonic victors, that really appeals to people that, you know, are interested in the conspiracy side of it anyway, that know a bit about it, and it's more likely to bring conspiracy type people to National Socialism. But the actual Adolf Hitler one, you know, that's the one that I would show to people, just to show them that they've been lied to, first of all. And that, I mean, that is the biggest lie of all. That's the most important one that needs breaking, is the lie about World War II. And Christians, I would be showing Christians the third one, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you're really showing in that you know, it really was a war against, you know, the Christian nations against Bolshevism, and why the European Union is the way that it is today. And also to change people's views about the Catholic Church as well, because a lot of people were very, very anti-Catholic, but seeing, you know, Freemasonic victors, it's really opened my eyes to a lot that I didn't know about before, about Catholicism.
Yeah, sure.
Could I add? I hope I wasn't misunderstood. I do agree that the first one, the first documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told, is the most powerful and the most necessary for the world. What I wanted to say is that the other two documentaries might appeal to other groups first, especially those that have this hang-up, this barrier that they cannot cross. So many people cannot even... they're so afraid of listening to anyone who does not criticize and not demonize Adolf Hitler. So that's what I meant.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Well, we need to break through the lies, basically. And I think, you know, the first one is the best as well. I mean, it is so moving. I mean, you know,
it does move you emotionally. Yeah.
And the other ones... Yeah, although they're really good, I mean, that first one was a real groundbreaker. There's never been anything quite like that. You know, and putting the music to it as well, it does get very emotional. I mean, one of the points of it we'll get into a little bit later. Again, it's very emotional what happened to these children as at the end of the war. But what we're going to move into now is part 15, and the three of us have just seen a preview. Well, the two of us have. Obviously, you made the preview for us, Dennis. Yeah. The attempted killing of God. Do you want to explain what you're trying to show in this next chapter before we break it down?
Yeah. I mean, I look at it as pretty straightforward, but a lot of people might be puzzled. After 1945, the victory was by the societies that wanted a godless society. And so consequently, since 1945, there's been certain big companies, and you know, although it's moved pretty slowly, you know, there's been certain, Google's one of them, you know, and a couple of others that I show, emphasizes this point of being anti-Jesus Christ, especially. And so I put it together with the kind of a part of the trailer where we went on about how, you know, communism wants to take down religion, wants to take down monarchies, everything what's happened really up to this point. And but it's interesting when you see the things what Google's got up to and the moon landing. The reason for the space, for the NASA space projects, I believe, is that when you look around Europe today, you'll probably do a survey in Europe today, and the European youth will probably believe in an alien more than they believe in God.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's quite common now, isn't it? And whether you believe that we went to the moon or not, I mean, you can include the moon landings in with Big Bang theory, evolution theory, this idea that man isn't the pinnacle of creation. You know, as if everything would all still be here if man ceased to exist. I don't think it would. You know that, what is it, when people say if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a sound? You know, if the white man wasn't here, I don't think the world would exist. I mean, the Bible tells us the world was created and man, it was created for man. Man was supposed to be the caretaker of it. And of course, what we now see is our enemies doing all they can to exterminate the white man, but through interbreeding and displacing us and abortion and homosexuality, everything is based at just wiping out the white man. And I really don't think the world would exist without us. And what the establishment is trying to tell us is oh no, we're just the same as every other species on Earth. We're just a form of life, and everything is of equal value. And it's not of equal value. You know, we were made in the image of God. Ants weren't. Chimpanzees weren't. You know, we were. And what they've tried to do is take that importance away from us and say, well, we're descended from chimpanzees.
Yeah. Which is a pet hate of mine.
Yeah, well, Schmidt, you saw something the other day. You sent me a link, something about evolution. A really good video that just completely demolished all these tenets of evolution. Who was that? Who was that by, Schmidt?
That was Kent Hovind, and he's a young Earth creationist, and I must say I don't really follow that line of thinking. I don't think the Earth is only a couple of thousand years old, but I don't have the knowledge to really come down on one side of the question or the other. But I thought it was really funny how he sort of made fun of the mainstream media or the educational system way of teaching how the world began and how life began. And he starts by saying something like, he defines the Big Bang as nothing exploded and created everything. And that sort of shows the absurdity of that claim of the Big Bang.
Yeah, it's like E. Michael Jones. He sums it up as shit happens. And that's it. You know, that the age of the Earth, I think, you know, we can understand that as man was created and everything else was fully formed. Everything else had been finished. The world was there, you know, complete with mountains that had taken thousands of years to build up, forests that had taken thousands of years, all that silt in the sand. Everything was fully created when he was there. So, of course, it's going to look a lot older than 6,000 years old. It's only you know, the white civilized man that's been here for around about 6,000 years. And that's where we find the evidence of civilized man. You know, writing goes back that far. Domesticated animals and the remains of cities, that's how old they are. So the way I see it is that that was when Adam was created, but the world itself is going to look much older and the universe is going to look much older than that. Otherwise, it wouldn't function. You know, things need to have been around for thousands of years to be in the form that they are in today so that we can interact with them. You know, it'd be no good having Adam put onto, you know, a ball of molten rock that was just, you know, really hot lava. That's no good. You know, it all needs to have cooled down. There needs to be a water cycle and everything else. So I don't go along with, you know, the Earth has to look 6,000 years old. But let's move into the actual chapter itself, chapter 15. And the first bit it says at the beginning is that these companies, they're trying to get rid of authority. Once you get rid of authority, the monarchy, the state, then man will go back to his primordial, natural and sinless state, which this is an idea that was put across by the anthropologists. I think, if not Franz Boas, but some woman. She went to, I believe it was, well, it was the tropical islands around about the Philippines area. And she basically watched this tribe and said that they were completely sinless and they're all sleeping with one another and there was no violence and it was paradise. And it was all a pack of lies. It's been found out to be false, but it was taken as gospel and it became a part of anthropology. And this idea that of the noble savage, and that we had corrupted the savage. Of course, it's nonsense. I mean, they were cannibals, weren't they, when we first got there? But I think, that's just to add to what you were trying to say. But what were you trying to say with that bit, Dennis, at the beginning?
Well, this is a thought. This is what's in the minds of these people. You know, they want to take us right back to the beginning, and then, you know, they can put us somewhere in the middle of Europe and rule over us, and we won't be any wiser. And they don't want us to get any wiser. And that'll be the fate of mankind, I think. But it's like, to me, like the dinosaur. I class these as theories, but they're teaching these theories as fact. And the only certifying things about dinosaurs right about the same time that they were, you know, doing the Frankfurt School and all this kind of care. And it just seemed to me, it just tied into everything where somebody sat down and thought, right, how can we explain this? How can we explain this? And how can we explain this? And at the same time, get rid of the idea of thinking and people thinking that there's a God. That's what it meant when I was a kid, even.
I remember changing with the nature documentaries, and instead of saying, well, this is a theory, it suddenly became as if it was fact. And this creature, over time, it grew extra legs and it grew feathers and then it was able to fly. You know, as if you could just think about it and change yourself into some other creature, as if the creature itself had done this. When it's not the creature itself that does that. We can't do anything like that. Animals can't do anything like that. You know, they are created the way that they are. I think this idea of getting rid of authority as well, I mean, that plays in with the protocols and this trying to stir up revolutions, you know, and anarchists and saying, take down the authority. Don't listen to the state. Don't listen to the government. Rebel against the government. And then what they'll be saying to the government or the people in power is pay them less, you know, they're no good, import exactly. Lots of others. And, you know, they'll play both sides off, one against the other. And while we're all fighting against one another, then, you know, they'll sneak in and take over the government. And that's what happened. That's what communism was, the Bolshevik Revolution. You know, they conned the Russians, basically, and it's basically rule by Jews. It's the same with the EU, isn't it? Just ruled over.
Can I just say, like, that if communism would never get anywhere if the Christian countries had stuck to their beliefs? If they had stayed powerful Christian countries, communism would never have got through the door.
Well, it's like monarchy, isn't it? You know, we were told, it would be so much better if you're ruling yourselves. But of course it wasn't. You know, and we're told that monarchy is bad now, but, you know, you can look back in history and we had some amazing kings. And, you know, they were born to be kings. They were taught to be kings. They weren't people that were just wanting to rule over everybody else. There were people whose value was the fact that they served their people and they were prepared to die for their people. You know, none of our politicians today would be prepared to die for us.
Yeah, I'm sure they won't. And they won't send their sons to die either.
You know, they would rather kill us, basically, and replace us.
Yeah.
People that are easier to rule over. Well, the next bit you've got in there, you're showing this Alexa machine, the Google Alexa machine.
40 million they sold, by the way, in America for that.
Yeah, I know people with them. It's worrying, isn't it? You know, if they leave them on, you think you phone them up, you talk to them, you know, you're talking to them and they're talking on one of those loudspeaker phones and that Alexa is recording it and it's recording your voice. And, it, you know, if you think you're anonymous, well, think again. If someone's got an Alexa in the room, you know, that's going to be picking up your voice, isn't it? It's a spy.
Yeah, it's prying. It's the thing we were talking about the other week about the eye on top of the pyramid. It's, you know, how they keep track of us.
Well, yeah, I mean, we said before about, you know, we didn't like all these cameras that are everywhere. I remember when they started putting cameras everywhere in London and, you know, they were saying that Britain is the most watched nation in the world and there's a camera on every corner and everybody didn't like it. But now they're putting these things in people's homes and people have been conned into buying them. They think it's the latest thing, having a spy in their home that's connected up to the internet. And it also,
I think they've actually done it with television, you know. So I think what make it work, there's a certain television, I think it's Japanese one, that you could actually see in your room.
Is that Samsung?
Could be, yeah.
I know these smart TVs, they're supposed to be watching what goes on in the room as well, aren't they?
Crazy, just crazy.
But this Alexa, that's supposed to be giving you your information, isn't it? You don't need an encyclopedia anymore. You don't need a teacher. All you need is an Alexa. And you just bark your orders at Alexa, and Alexa tells you all you need to know.
Gives you the right answer, sure.
Unless you ask who Jesus is.
Strangely enough.
What's going on there, Dennis?
Well, obviously the machine answers back, I don't understand the question, which, you know, Google haven't commented on it. They've been asked for a comment. I point out that the two people running Google are, you know, Jewish of Russian descent with 50 billion apiece. So these are the prime kind of people who, were, you know, would want to see the end of God. So Google is, you know, manipulating his word and trying to, I mean, you can ask him about Muhammad, you can ask about Satan, you can ask about Buddha. I'll ask about Jesus, and he doesn't understand.
So we'll tell you about Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of information about Muhammad, but nothing on there about Jesus. I dare say that if you were to ask it about things like the Holocaust, it's going to tell you, oh, six million Jews were gassed by the wicked, evil Nazis, and that's all you need to know. And that's going to be the official line will be just coming from this Alexa. And anybody that goes against what Alexa says, you know, they're going to be thought criminals. I can see that coming.
Exactly.
That's the point of this thing. Very, very dangerous.
Well, it's a bit like Wikipedia, but more advanced, isn't it? Because Wikipedia, obviously controlled by Zionists. You can go on there and you just get a complete Zionist version. And that's what most people do. It's the biggest encyclopedia on the internet. So a lot fall for that one, not knowing the agenda. But this is another step up, I think.
Well, Wikipedia has the veneer of, you know, of being controlled by the people, doesn't it? They say, oh, anybody can contribute to it. So it's the collected intelligence of all the internet users. But then if you say anything that isn't politically correct, then these Jewish moderators remove it.
Yeah, you know? They have special schools to teach because it's not that easy to, you know, to put stuff up there and have these special schools which are shorting communists by the back door. And openly admit they want the Zionist viewpoint shown, not nobody else.
It's Jewish world history. It's like when you're watching the BBC and they're telling you the history of Christianity and it's a Jew that's telling you it. Always. Without fail, it's always a Jew that will be telling you the history of Christianity on the BBC. But these two Jews that run Google, it's another Jew that runs Wikipedia. What do the Jews have to do with Apple?
Well, I don't think he was a Jew so much, but he was one of the. I think there was two actually invented it. They were Satanists, so you know they fall in line with the Jews as well. Apple, obviously, you know the biotech of the Apple, the Signia. They sold the first Apple for $666. All signs like that in their advertising. Again, it's just another big company, big millionaires that are billionaires even, what we share, pushing that agenda.
Well, we know that, it doesn't actually say an apple in the Old Testament. It talks about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and it was always put across as if it was an apple, and that's what they are pointing at, aren't they? They're saying this is the forbidden fruit. This is the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, and it's great. It's a good thing. It will open up your eyes. You know, they're saying the same as what the serpent was saying, trying to encourage people to take this and saying that, you know, Apple computers, they're an allegory for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They're pushing the same ideas, same Gnostic ideas as the serpent.
Yeah, so like that Luciferian thing again.
Yeah, well, directly.
He wasn't evil. He wanted to help mankind.
They're directly linking themselves with it, and the symbols that they're using as well. You show a lot of symbols, Dennis, as well. You've got the Google Play symbol, which is very similar to the seal of Satan. You've got app stores both on Apple and on Google. They've got square and compasses. You've got Gmail. And that's the Masonic apron. I mean, that is exactly the same as a Masonic apron, isn't it?
That Gmail symbol. Yeah.
You've got all sorts on there. Some of them I hadn't noticed before. But, you know, if it was just one or two, you could say, well, maybe that's a coincidence. But you've got a whole screen full of them.
Gets ridiculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it can't be a coincidence. And even if it's not being deliberately done, what it shows is that the people that they've got working for them are Jews and Masons, because they think in Jewish and Masonic terms. When they try to draw an image of something, they can't help but make it Masonic. They can't help but make the App Store symbol look like a square and compasses, because they're Masons. That's what it shows. Even if it's not a conspiracy, even if they're not, you know, carefully showing that this is what they support, it says that that's what these people are that are designing this, because that's the way they think.
I think it's intended, but
subtle.
They get so cocky these days because they've got no resistance.
Well, another one you've got there as well. You've got this Horus symbol, which I hadn't really noticed before. I know that Horus does that. He puts his finger up to his lips. I'm not quite sure why. Yes, I didn't have time to look that up. Do you know why that is, Dennis? Why he does that? What it's supposed to symbolise?
Well, it's associated with him because most of the statues you see of him, he has this finger on the lips. A lot do it. I mean, Obama's done it, but you can excuse some of them because maybe he's telling the crowd to be quiet. But in this case, it's a kind of we know type of thing. So it's like there's no need even to talk about it because these people they'll know each other. Like, you know, like they have Mason handshakes.
Yeah,
it's a similar thing.
Well, you got Darwin; he's making this Horus symbol. You got Lady Gaga, Hannah Montana, lots of people doing it. It's finger to the lips. So it obviously means something to people that have been initiated into the secret societies. That they've got some understanding of what it actually means.
Well, in a sense, it means Horus is their god, which is amazing for somebody like our friend here, who's Darwin. Who says I'm from a monkey?
Well, see, this is one of the things that gets me, Dennis. You know, you've got people that are fascinated by Egyptian gods and the Gnostic stuff and the pagan stuff, and yet it's all, you know, the people that we are against that use this symbolism. It's the establishment that use it. You know, you're Lady Gaga, you're Hannah Montana. You know, if you look at the EU, I mean, that's surrounded by all these pagan images. It's used as a bull
Babylon
with your own bone.
Yeah,
how can nationalists think that if they follow this sort of stuff, it's going to help them? when it's our enemy that follows this stuff, and it's our enemy that's helped by it. You know, if we go along with it and follow it, it's not going to be of any benefit to us.
Not at all. Are you talking about the pagan nationalists?
Yeah, or just the pagan stuff, the Egyptian stuff, the Gnostic stuff. Mm. It's all followed by the Masons, the Jews, and the establishment. And if we try to follow it, you know, those gods aren't going to help us. You know, they're aligned against us. You know, we are the remnant of Christendom. And you know, it should be so obvious that's what they are against is Christianity and Christian beliefs and Christian morals. That's what they've wiped out since
the Second World War. Stems back to World War II. It's that is the connection. Because when they put a media blackout in World War I and World War II and the Boer War, it's to stop people from realizing what the agenda is. And I can go on the street now and ask somebody, do you think World War II is a holy war? Is look at me gone out. But I've got plenty of evidence to say it was.
Well, it was quite clearly a holy war. And you can look at the imagery that the National Socialists use. I mean, there's that wonderful picture where there's all the united Christian nations with the cross, and there's the Bolsheviks stamping down on it. I mean, that shows you it was Christendom against the atheistic Bolsheviks, Bolshevik hordes.
Yeah, that was the last great... that because it makes their job harder to kill Christians. If everybody knows in the world that that's what they're doing, I'm not saying they wouldn't carry on and do it, but it would make it more difficult and they're for an easier life, aren't they?
Well, you've also got the BBC. They've dropped AD for CE. Now, it's the common era now, not Anno Domini. It's not to do with Christ and man being made in the image of God. We're living in the common era. You know, the common or garden human, exactly the same as everyone else, nothing special. CE, common era. And you've also got God being kept out of the European Union. I think there's, was it one of the headlines that you show where they're bragging about that? Keeping God out of the EU?
Yeah, let's keep it that way. I mean, the BBC is notorious. I mean, actually, the headline here says BBC drops Anno Domini to avoid offending non-Christians. But not exactly, you know, bothered about offending Christians.
No, they don't want to offend Jews. That's what it is. I mean, the BBC is full of so many Jews. I did a Daily Nationalist this week looking at the actual diversity of the BBC, and they've got... I think it was 417 transsexuals working at the BBC. 417.
Yeah, I heard that.
Out of 21,000 staff in all. I mean, that's masses of them. And homosexuals, 11% are homosexual out of all the staff.
Mm.
So that's, you know, 10 times the amount that they are in the general population. Now, who knows how many Jews they've got working for them. And they want more... non-whites, they want more lesbians, they're going to make the place more friendly to transsexualism, and this is beamed into people's homes, and we're forced to pay for it. We're forced to pay this tax for it, the TV licence, to actually pay for this brainwashing that goes on.
Can I just say, I watched a film earlier this week from, I think the mid-80s, early 90s, and that was, you probably remember it, Full Monty. And he got to a point where he discovered two of the guys was gay. And they were both facing each other, but that's as far as it went. They didn't actually touch each other, kiss each other. And I just thought how far it's come now, because on Coronation Street now, they were going and ticking each other into the bedroom.
I remember when they had the first
decade
kiss.
Or two.
Yeah, on EastEnders, you know, they had the first kiss on EastEnders. And now that you know they're pushing it in primary schools now. They've got gay pride celebration at primary school. There was another news report this week. A 5-year-old girl. This 5-year-old girl was upset because she'd been looking forward to going on the school's pride parade. They left the gay bit out. They said the school's pride parade. And I just thought, how sick is that? You know, a 5-year-old girl looking forward to. You know, how can they just misuse innocence like that?
It's worrying. That is very worrying.
lie to them and tell them that they're celebrating something good when they're, you know, they're celebrating a hideous perversity where, I mean, homosexuals are 40 times more likely to molest children than straight people are. You know, 40%.
Yeah, it's a lot to do with black magic as well. A lot of homosexuality in that.
Well, it is. It's the ultimate act of against creation, isn't it? You know, creation is a man and a woman, and they create a child. You know, you think about it, that's wholly fluid. It can create life. It's a sacrament in the Catholic Church, the marriage between man and woman. It's the act, the marriage act, the act of consummation. You know, it's the act that creates life. And what do homosexuals do? They revert that. They turn it round so that it's actually, you know, putting the most holy part of your body into a cesspit, into a sewer pipe. And it's not going to create anything good. It's going to destroy your body. It's going to create disease. It's absolute filth. And what they've got a five-year-old child dancing on a parade, imitating these homosexuals, because this parade is supposed to be like a gay pride parade, but at school. So there's, who knows what they do in it. You know what the homosexuals do on these parades. Are they teaching these children to do the same?
I think that is going to happen if it's not already happening. I mean, you know, they look at this, they believe it's right, so they will teach children it. And that, like I said, is the worrying thing, because no sane parent would put up with it.
Well, it's going up all the time. The numbers of homosexuals is increasing, I think, by a million every year. And it's about 4 or 5% of those that are under 21. So it's the youngsters that are now turning to this because they've been brainwashed.
But that's right.
You know, some people might say, well, how can you say that 40% of homosexuals are pedophiles? Well, if you look in prisons, 40% of the pedophiles that are in there for molesting little boys. And yet homosexuals are only 1% of the population. So they should only be 1% of the pedophiles in prison, but they're not. They're 40% of the pedophiles. Amazing. So they're 40 times more likely to abuse children. And then they're going into these schools telling these kids, well, homosexuals are absolutely fine. They're just like anybody else. You don't need to be fearful around them. You don't need to be worried about them. And they're precisely the very, very people that are most likely to abuse them.
Yeah.
It's sick.
It is sick. You're right.
Well, what have you got in? Have you got any ideas for the rest of chapter 15, Dennis? You've got this.
Yeah,
first
well, what
bit
it
finished?
Is like this will all link up to an earlier part of why I explained about the swastika and the war, the holy war declared under the swastika, you know, for Christianity, and not just Christianity, even Islam declared jihad as well at one point, but. You know, the swastika is a cross for all religions. And funnily enough, I saw an episode of a court case in Lithuania where some students went on a march with some, with these swastikas. And they got took to court for it. And the judge, they said they weren't praising anything to do with National Socialism. It was just a historical artifact. And the judge agreed with them, which was, that surprised me more than anything. But this swastika has been around a lot longer than even Jesus' cross was, but there's a lot of similarity there and, you know, links to it. And it was linked as a Christian cross when they went into the Soviet Union. And that's, you know, all going to link up with this modern day society, which is trying to kill Christianity.
And the swastika.
Which they would if they'd won the war, you know.
Well, and the swastika, isn't it? I mean, they've removed the swastika as well.
It's banned. Exactly.
The hook cross. The hook cross. All right, well, let's move into the final part of today's podcast. And that's to do with the children, the evacuees in Germany, because we've all heard about the Kinder transport. I get sick to death of hearing about the Kinder transport. It has its own wiki page. It's mentioned at least every week on the BBC. They bring it up. And all it was 10,000 Jewish kids. Every single one of them actually survived the war. They had no hardship. They were brought to Britain, and we don't hear anything at all about the German kids. And most people don't even think about it. Well, what happened to the German kids? I mean, the British kids, they were removed at the start of the war from the cities to the countryside. And sometimes we hear about them and what they had to go through being removed from their families. But we never hear anything at all about the German children. And So I looked it up on revisionist.net. That's Simon Shepherd's site. It's a really good site. And it's got a whole page on it. So I've got some quotes here about it that I'll go through. While there are many movies and books about British children being evacuated to the countryside because of the Blitz, not much is said about the Kinderlandverschickung, or evacuation of German children. As air attacks increased, children at risk in various German cities were sent away for their safety. Initially, the evacuation of children applied only to Berlin and Hamburg, and over 200,000 small children were evacuated from Berlin alone between September and November of 1940. Well, that's 20 times as many of these Jewish kids to start with. But after the beginning of 1941, there were already up to an estimated 300,000 children evacuated. Among the host areas for the year 1941 were parts of Bavaria, Salzburg, Styria, West Prussia, Pomerania, Silesia, the Sudetenland, Slovakia, East Prussia, and parts of Saxony, as well as safe countries such as Hungary, areas in the present-day Czech Republic, and Denmark. In the summer of 1943, the increased air attacks on the civilian residential areas of cities, particularly in the Rhine-Ruhr area, made a mass evacuation of women and children necessary. It was the largest inland migration in human history to date, as children were evacuated from cities such as Essen, Cologne, and Dusseldorf, and then from Schleswig-Holstein, Lower Saxony, and Westphalia. In addition to the use of requisitioned homes and rooms, a number of special evacuation camps were arranged, which even contained schools and medical facilities. They were called KLV camps. In the last years of the war, some children spent more than 18 months in these camps. By the end of the war, up to 2 million children aged 10 to 14 years lived at least for a time in over 2,000 camps. According to most sources, these camps were by and large as pleasant as they could be under the circumstances of the war, and nor were they indoctrination facilities. Suddenly, after the German defeat at Stalingrad, Germany had to evacuate the more distant evacuation camps, such as those which had been established in Bulgaria and Romania, and new camps were built in Bohemia and Moravia, then thought to be safe areas. Nothing would be safe for long, however. For instance, there were still 26 camps in the Czech border regions, holding a total of around 850,000 children, right up until the end of the war. Both the Soviet and the Western Allied forces overran many of the KLV camps in the last months of the war. The death rate in 1945 had reached a similar level to the 30 Years' War nearly 300 years earlier. At one point, taking 4,000 people a day in places such as Berlin. Victims of unchecked disease, untreated injuries, illness and starvation, many children were left to starve or fend for themselves at the mercy of the elements or predators. Thousands never saw their homes, friends, parents or relatives again, and the fates of many thousands of children has never been learned. Allied leaders had vetoed efforts of the Famine Relief Committee formed in 1942 to send food to the hard-pressed civilians of occupied Europe. Allied leaders, above all Roosevelt and Churchill, were obdurate in their refusal to cooperate with the Famine Relief Committee and the Red Cross. In one horrible situation, some 10,000 German children under five died in Danish camps after the liberation. In the final weeks of the war, between February 11th and May 5th, about 250,000 German women, children and elderly refugees from East Prussia, Pomerania and the Baltic provinces fled from the Red Army across the Baltic Sea. A third of them were younger than 15 years old. They were interned as enemies in hundreds of camps in Denmark, placed behind barbed wire and guarded by heavily armed overseers. The largest camp was located in Oxwall and had 37,000 detainees. Nutrition was poor and medical care absent. In 1945 alone, more than 13,000 people needlessly died, among them some 7,000 children under 5 years old. The Danish Association of Doctors had decided in March 1945 that German refugees would not receive any medical care. That same month, their Red Cross refused to take any action because public sentiment was, quote, against the Germans. 80% of the small children that landed in Denmark did not survive the ordeal. They starved or were unable to fight infections due to extreme malnutrition. And don't forget, what we hear about is 10,000 Jews that went on a kinder transport to Britain safely out of the war. None of them died. None of them suffered any hardships. And yet they're classed as Holocaust survivors and kinder transport refugees. And Prince William goes to see them in Israel. And yet nobody says anything at all about these Germans. And that instance there, the Denmark one, that's just one instance out of many. And these countries are supposedly liberated, and that's what they did to the Germans afterwards. But thankfully, there were some countries that were actually good to them. In contrast, the Swiss went beyond the call of duty, helping the children in distress. 35,000 Austrian children were sent just to the city of Bern between 1945 and 1955 through the Swiss Red Cross, and thousands more were sent to places all over Switzerland. The Swiss Red Cross in Austria struggled to gain access to the children being starved in the Soviet-occupied sector of Vienna. The Swiss Red Cross also set up cafeterias and kitchens with meals and medicine supplied and sponsored adoptions for hundreds of orphaned children. They also supported children's homes, convalescent homes, baby stations, tuberculosis camps, and refugee camps in Austria. So the Swiss even did this in Austria as well. It wasn't just in Switzerland. So Schmidt, do you know anything about this? Had you heard about this before I actually asked you about it?
I was vaguely aware of these efforts to help, but not in the detail I also read what you just read. And then I researched a little, and I was able to find actually a Wikipedia article. It's only available in German, in no other language, but I have been able to find some more data, some more numbers. It was called the Kinderhilfe des Schweizerischen Roten Kreuzes, the Children Aid of the Swiss Red Cross. And this was the name of this relief effort, which was active between the January of 1942 until 1955. No other Red Cross organization was as active as the Swiss one outside its own borders between 1942 and 1945. The Swiss Red Cross was given the money of the so-called Schweizer Spende, or Swiss donation, which was a merger of the efforts of various charity organizations of various religious and political backgrounds. The goal was to provide help for the suffering people in 18 war-torn countries in Europe and to initiate rebuilding. The Swiss government provided 150 million Swiss francs, and the Swiss people donated 50 million Swiss francs. And if you multiply these numbers by 10, you will get an approximation of what that would be in today's money. So 1.5 billion and 500 million Swiss francs. And you can actually substitute this with dollars. $1 and one Swiss franc are almost of equal value these days. And beginning in April 1946, train loads full of German children were brought to Switzerland. And please note this, that this does not start when the war is over, when the suffering is really great. I mean, if people have no idea or do not really know what Germany was like towards the end of the war, I would recommend the documentary Hellstorm. All the raping towards the civilians, the absolutely needless bombarding of civilians, and intentional bombarding of civilians, firebombing them. So please note that this only started in April 1946. Almost a year later, which is consistent with the reported ban on aid organizations helping any Germans for almost a year. And this was because, as we know, Roosevelt and Churchill actually banned these aid organizations from helping. And these German children were given sausage soup then when they arrived in Switzerland, which was for many of them the first normal meal for weeks or even months. And these things I just quoted are mostly from this German Wikipedia article on these help efforts. No reason there is, of course, given why the help started so late, but we know why that is. And after medical examination of these children, those who had infectious diseases were separated and sent to special facilities where they received adequate medical care, and others were placed with Swiss families. And since the beginning of 1946 also, over 2 million children were fed each day inside Germany in the zones occupied by the Allies. That's what I was able to find out on the subject.
So that's the ones that they were saying that they had problems in Vienna, and I guess in Austria, and areas that the Soviets were, they had problems there. But the Swiss really did fight to feed these children. I mean, that's the sort of thing that, you know, you would want to see a movie about, isn't it? You know, these brave Swiss going out there hunting for these children to look after them, you know, not hearing about Jews that, you know, that didn't suffer at all, which is what we hear about with this kinder transport. I would like to hear, you know, more about what the Swiss did. You know, I think it's really good that they went against the grain with what the rest of Europe were doing. And there was one other country as well that was really good. Also in 1945, 1946, the Irish Red Cross organised Operation Shamrock, where over 1,000 children from bombed out or starving areas of the continent were brought to Ireland to live with Irish families, some later to be adopted by their Irish host families. German children were among those helped by the Save the German Children Society, which was set up in the aftermath of the razing of German cities in World War II. The children included orphans and those children sent off to a far land for 3 years by heartsick mothers who could not feed them. In the weeks following the appeal, more than 1,000 children between the ages of 5 and 10 docked at Dublin Port. They were fed a special diet to help them get used to normal food again before they were sent off to their new Irish families. Some of the children went home to their parents and some remained in Ireland. I mean, it's a drop in the ocean, really, when you think it was 2 million children in all. But just the fact that they were able to help 1,000, and you know, the Swiss were able to help some as well, it shows that, you know, our ancestors weren't completely heartless. You know, the people in the Allied countries, well, I guess they were both neutral, weren't they? But they were still European and they weren't heartless. And, you know, despite the fact that everything else was saying that Germany were the bad guys, you know, they went out and helped them. Dennis, I think this information was new to you as well, wasn't it? When you first heard about it today?
When I think about it, it doesn't surprise me. I should have looked into it just on, you know, the fact that I looked into the amount of dead, what some people would call sacrifices after the wars. And this is just another example of another stack of dead bodies, only children. And, of course, children are the most, shall we say, the most sacred of beings. So for so many children to die and not to actually hear about it, you know, is complete sacrilege, to be honest. I mean, Ireland, I'm not surprised in a way, because they're a Christian country. Well, they were a Christian country till the other week, shall I say. But they were a Christian country at the time, just like Germany, and they were neutral, and certainly did have the problems with the British Empire. So that doesn't surprise you, really. Yeah, it's the first time I've heard of it. I've only heard about, you know, the British ones who were taken into the country like yourself.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about it. It's, you know, it's something that's covered up. There's no Wikipedia page for them. You know, 2 million of them. And there's no Wikipedia page for them at all. You know, there's a great big one on the kinder transport. And as I say, you know, we hear about that. Hollywood will tell us about that. The BBC will tell us about that. Nobody thinks, but what happened to the German children? You know, we heard about the German women that were raped, and, you know, what went on there with the Red Army. There was the Hellstorm documentary that Schmidt spoke about, but just the children themselves, what happened to them? You know, maybe a chapter of your series, Dennis. Maybe that would be good.
Well,
devote some time to it.
Can I just say before we close, I have a theory now. I heard a speech by Hitler the other day, and I could never fully understand why, after World War I, Germany was cut up, and there were sections of Germans, in ethnic Germans, in these other countries. I couldn't really see the reasoning behind it. And then I saw a speech of Hitler's on the Czechoslovakian situation, where he compared the Germans to the Palestinians. And he said, unlike the Palestinians, they have not got people behind them, obviously talking about invading. Now, when you look, when they first split the countries up after World War One, there was no Adolf Hitler. This was the Weimar. So my guess is that they split the country up. The ethnic Germans would have been persecuted just like the Palestinians are in Israel. But Hitler was making that point, you know, they have got people to defend them.
Oh, they were massively persecuted, weren't they? I mean, that's what the Danzig situation was about. And I dare say these kids, you know, that, I mean, look at what happened to them in Denmark. Look at the way they were treated. You know, they were enemy combatants, children. 80% of them died. And this was just because, you know, the Danes weren't very happy with the Germans. And yet, surely that, you know, that's not the only instance of that happening. There's obviously been a cover up there. Anyway, that's it for today. Thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much for joining us. Sure. Once again, Schmidt, very good to hear from you again. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Will Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend.
Tuned into Radio Aryan.